We're back and better than ever, baby, with an all-new episode of So Good We Named It and More, featuring me, Barrett, and an esteemed guest. However, the intro was not exactly ready yet. You know, I was gonna use it for this episode, and I thought, why should I take away from the artistry that is this interview with an intro? So I'm gonna save it. Leave you something to look forward to for episode 5, 6, or maybe 80. But for now, it's So Good We Named It and More. Hello, and welcome to So Good We Named It and More, episode 4. Yeah, I got bars. And today I have Miles, it's Warden.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, a writer on Act Your Age. And if y'all listen to either of my podcasts, you know I go hard for Act Your Age, so don't act like you didn't know. But thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And by us, I mean me. I can't help but notice your shirt. Is that the cast of Martin in the style of Bebe's Kids?
It is indeed.
For any Caucasians listening, go look that up. It's quite entertaining. And you may hear Black people refer to people as Bebe's Kids in real life due to that film. So, as I stated, you worked on Act Your Age, a job that I would love to have. So if he goes missing, you all know why. How did you end up, we'll get to, you know, your career as a whole, but how did you end up on this specific show since it's my current TV obsession?
I was blessed. Do you want to know like my path to the show or just specifically just the
sure
show?
You can give us the path. You can start at conception, however far back you want to go.
It was a cold, rainy day. So basically what happened was, I'll give you my career path that led to the show. I moved to LA about 10 years ago, as a huge sitcom fan, just like yourself. I moved here and I immediately found my current writing partner, Capri Sampson, who worked with me also on Act Your Age. I moved here on a complete whim, though. I moved here from Georgia. And I went to this church for the very first time in Georgia. And while I was at this church, the pastor started preaching. And in the middle of his sermon, he called me out. And he said, "Hey, you, young man, stand up." And I was looking around. I was like, "Oh, man, somebody done fell asleep. Somebody in trouble. What's going on here?" And he said, "No, I'm talking to you." I said, "Stand up." I said, "Oh, no, what did I do?" And he was like, "The Lord has given me a word for you. He's telling me you want to be a writer. And I see these very big things for you, but you need to make a jump and move to LA. And it's not going to be easy. It's going to be a difficult path, et cetera, et cetera." Never met this man a day in my life. First time in the church, and he told me this. No one else even knew that I was secretly, like, looking up apartments in LA and, like, plotting the path, but like I had no money at the time, but I was just doing my homework and studying, and I had started self-teaching myself how to write scripts, and I was just listening to every podcast I could listen to and reading every book I could get my hand on. So when I went to this church and I heard that, I was like, well, somehow, like, this is bigger than me at this point. So I just listened to him. I took the jump, and the day two of being here, I was on set at who is now Oscar winner Matthew Cherry, but at the time he was just a guy who was doing a little web series, and he needed extras in the web series. So I went to be an extra in this web series, and then I was on set, and they kept pairing me up with this young woman, and the whole time they're like, "Hey, you two come over here by the bar, you two go dance, you two go do this," and I'm like, "Well, my name's not you two, what's your name?" And we introduce ourselves, and we hit it off about our love for sitcoms. We all grew up in this age of like the TGIFs and like the WB, where they had Sister, Smart Guy, and we had Fresh Prince and Hang with Mr. Cooper, and all of these sitcoms where like you could see us and like you could relate and like you could see yourself in particular as like a young person coming up in the world today. So we were like, well, we don't see ourselves as being reflected as much as we used to when we were growing up. And she's an actress as well, and she wasn't receiving the type of roles that she wanted to receive. I was like, let's team up and create those roles and create the things that we want to see, and be the change basically that we want to be, that we would like to see. So we teamed up and started writing together. And then at the same time, there was a reboot of the show Boy Meets World called Girl Meets World. I'm not sure if you're familiar. So
I am familiar, yes.
Okay. So yes, I was really big fan of Boy Meets World. So again, being self-taught, I was like, these tapings that you can go to LA and watch a sitcom be filmed in front of you is the best education you can have. I think is even better than college, honestly. So I was like, I'm just gonna go to every taping I can get to and like just experience it firsthand and like soak everything up. So I went to one taping of Girl Meets World, met the cast and everything after the show. And then one of the lead actresses, Rowan Blanchard, was like, yo, like, you've come once, you've come twice. Like, I really look forward to seeing you out there. I can tell when things are really funny, if you're laughing. If it's not really funny, you give us the real after and before. So she's like, I like your presence out there. I want you to come to, like, every taping. Now, that could have been Hollywood talk in hindsight. But in the in the moment, I was like, they want me every taping. I'm going to be at every taping. So I started going to every single taping during this time Capri was at in college. So I was going to every taping by myself, and I met some friends. And I would just go to every taping, and after a while, I became really good friends with the castmates and the crew and the writers and everybody like that. I met my now mentor, Mark Bluntman, who worked on that show. And like, I met the creator of that show, and he also created things like Dinosaur and a bunch of shows. So like, we started talking or whatever, and he knew I wanted to be a writer. So he read a script of Capri and I's, and that ended up leading to him writing a letter of recommendation for us to get into the ABC program. Unfortunately, we did not get into that program, but we maintained our relationship with those people. And honestly, actually a spec script that we wrote to get into that program was a spec of the Carmichael Show, which was like one of our favorite shows at the time, full of legends who one of would later come on At Your Age, Loretta Devine, was on the Carmichael Show. So we wrote a letter, we wrote a spec of that show to get into the program.
Let me just let the people know real quick who aren't in the biz what a spec script is. Essentially, it's just a script of a show that already exists that you just make yourself. And back in the day, there used to be a way to become a writer on a show. I don't know if that's still the case. Perhaps you can share as someone currently doing it.
Exactly. So you used to, that used to be a thing for you to get another job or at least get your name out there. But nowadays, there's so many original shows, it's kind of hard to keep up with spec scripts. So that actually leads into the conversation I was about to go to, was during the pandemic, when there wasn't a lot happening and everybody was just on the internet or whatever, there was a conversation amongst a bunch of big writers, showrunners, that were saying like, hey, should younger writers still write spec scripts? A lot of people were like, no, because they don't go anywhere. After you write them for these contests or these fellowships, they just sit around and collect dust. And a lot of people were like, the job of a staff writer is still to write in the voice of the showrunner. So you need to write these things, even if they don't technically go anywhere, they're good for you to learn. And like they, some of the showrunners were like, we still like to read them, even though your reps don't like to do a lot with them. Your reps are just looking for quick sales. So they want you to write original content, but the actual job 9 times out of 10 is to write another person's voice when you're on someone else's show. So a lot, there was a bunch of showrunners who were like, we still would love to see more spec scripts. So we had that spec script of the Carmichael Show that was just laying around collecting dust. And I knew a lot of other people had a bunch of very talented scripts that were laying around collecting dust. And this was during the pandemic, so you couldn't do much and you weren't watching new episodes of your shows. So I was like, okay, me and a friend of mine, Jackie Penn, we gathered up every spec script we could find on the internet, and we put it all on a spreadsheet and organized it. And it was like 90% people who were finalists or won a major fellowship or a major contest. So like we put together all of these very amazing scripts and just threw them out on the internet because they were worthless anyway. It's not like you could be worried about anybody stealing it because we don't own the shows that we write the spec scripts for. So we just threw it out on the internet so everybody could pass it around or whatever and read each other. And our spec script got back to Mike Royce, who was actually a producer on the Carmichael Show, and he's done a bunch of other things as well. So he reached out to us and he was like, hey, I read your spec script of the Carmichael Show. It was amazing. What are you guys doing? I would love to help you out. Wow. How can I help you? And at the time, we didn't have reps or anything. So he was like, well, let me help you find reps. Do you have anybody in mind? We had a company called Artist First in mind, and he was like, I actually happened to go to college with the CEO of the company, so let me shoot your stuff over there, and like, I'll get back to you. He did it. He was like, you know how it is, it'll take a month or two to get back, but need anything else in the meantime, let me know. The next day, he reached back out and said, they loved your work, and they want to hire you, or they want to manage you. So we got our reps in the pandemic, and then we've been working ever since. We worked previously on an Ava DuVernay dramedy, animated dramedy that was for Netflix called Wings of Fire. And then right after that, we got our job on Actor Age, thanks to Allison Faust. So it was also managed by Artist First, which is how that came to be.
So basically, spec scripts still are a thing. So let me go dig up mine from probably 15 years ago for Degrassi, The Next Generation, because I hear they're bringing that back. Y'all can hire me. And from like probably, I don't know, eighth, ninth grade, my The Golden Girls meets The Facts of Life meets Designing Women crossover event. Might be a little hard to get that made now, but at the time, everyone was still alive when I wrote that. But good to know, because I didn't think that they were a thing.
That sounds like it would go viral so fast. I would love to
If I could get into my old AOL email address where I was sending that to people, I don't know who really wanted to read it, but I would love to see that. But I do have a friend that I did send my Degrassi one to that still brings it up. Like, oh my God, that was so good. I'm like, I don't even know where that is now, but thank you. But I wouldn't have assumed. And whatever church you went to, let me know so I can go. He might have me stand up for a different reason. But maybe he'll have something inspirational to say to me. Because sometimes stuff just kind of smacks you in the face that makes you feel like, okay, maybe, you know, I need to do something with this. As I always say, I could move tomorrow. I'm ready to go. My husband likes things like stability and jobs and apartments. Who cares about all of that when you're chasing your dreams?
But I'm the same way. My partner is the more stable one of us, which is why she was going to college while I was going to tapings of TV shows. She was building her backup plan, and I was like, I'm going to just do this.
I mean, somebody's got to do it, but I mean, I don't know how old you are. You could be 25 or 60 with black people. You never know. But I assume we're around the same age, so we probably grew up watching a lot of the same shows. And like you said, there's not as much representation despite how woke they're trying to say things are. Ain't no black people on TV. Or as they said on Mad TV, no blacks on the TV screen was the song, I believe, parodying No Sex in the Champagne Room, if I recall correctly. But it's even more true now. So with Act to Your Age, I'm sure you were far more upset than I, seeing as how that was your job, but I get very emotionally invested when my shows get canceled. And despite them having the highest ratings that Bounce has ever had, somehow that wasn't quite good enough. You know, some shows on that network get 8-9 seasons and they look like a high school play, but you know, whatever. Were you shocked to hear that it was canceled?
I was very shocked because, as you said, we had the highest ratings that the network had seen. So you think, well, okay, we did our job then. So, like, that means you'll get to do it more. Like, why would you not want more of a success? But unfortunately, they seem to not want to do very much scripted work right now. So they seem to be shifting gears, and we're just not a part of the new plan that they have. But I was definitely shocked, especially after having been in the strike, and like, you know, we thought we were going to come out of it and go back to work. We were very excited to get back to work. We had so many storylines left on the table. Also, we were just such a family. Like, I seen everybody from that cast and crew so much in between seasons and during the strike. Like I said, we all bonded even closer together, so it was really devastating for sure.
Yeah, I'm still having flashbacks. I think it was Sunday, I was on the couch and I drew the blinds so I could watch TV without the glare. That reminded me that that's what I would do every weekend, because I would wait for it to hit the Brown Sugar app, which I've since deleted. I don't need it now. But I would be like, okay, well, it's Sunday morning. I don't want any glare. I need to be able to see everything. Let me let the blinds down. And I'm watching. I'm like, oh, I don't have that to watch now. What am I even going to look at? But I know it is going to be on Netflix. Is there any possibility that you think they could maybe get a season 2 if it got enough views?
There's always a possibility. We're hopeful that we are able to get on Netflix and knock it out the park and get into that top 10. As we see with these other old shows that spark up all of this interest, I think there's definitely an audience there for it on Netflix. And I think that hopefully the audience speaks loud enough, we could maybe get a second season. I'm hopeful.
I need more than a second. I was ready to see Olivia and him. Well, I guess she wouldn't have a baby because she said she doesn't want children, but at least get married and have the mamas break the wedding up. I was just seeing it, right. You know, 10 seasons ahead. And, you know, had it snatched away. But I know I've seen you tweet about it, and this kind of relates to it, that they want shows to have, like, instant, you know, numbers, and, although this one did. And if you don't, you're gone. Like, shows get canceled after one episode. Like, what are they realistically expecting here? Everything cannot be Abbott Elementary. Everybody can't have a hit. Otherwise, you know, like, I just don't know how that would even work. You don't get a chance to grow when previously, like I discussed on another episode, you know, Cheers, Seinfeld, those mega hits took three seasons. What is the answer? How do you combat that?
It's hard now. Like I said, they're looking at shows and currently making new versions of hits like Suits that goes to a Netflix 10, 15 years later and gets this really big audience. And the connection there is that, like, people wanted to dive into a show that had 7, 8 seasons. They knew that they could just actually binge it every night and enjoy these characters. And they see every time Friends goes to a new platform, it's always at the top list on that platform. And all of these other shows, too, is because people like to just dive in with characters who they love. Like you said, you wanted to see Olivia and Jacob go through all of those things. And, like, that's the type you want, that Ross and Rachel. You want these things with these character dynamics. And it's impossible to do in an 8 to 10 episodes or one season. It's just not really possible to do. So shows need more time for that audience to really dive into it and fall in love with the characters. So I mean, hopefully they're taking notes from the things like the success of Suits, and we're able to get longer shows or shows that are more like that, where they understand you need longer seasons to really dive into. And I've read articles too where, like, new audiences aren't even tuning into these new shows because they know that they'll get canceled. So it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy where they're not watching because their last show that they loved and watched got canceled after one season. So they've had their heart broken so much that they're afraid to watch new shows. So then nobody watches the new show. So then they get canceled. But
yeah, I am definitely guilty of that. My rationale is, oh, I'm not a Nielsen family, so I don't matter. But yeah, I will either wait for the whole first season to be out or wait until a show is renewed, because I'm going to be pissed off if I'm invested. And a lot of shows I don't even hear about until they're gone and canceled. Like, it's not a sitcom, but I think it's Midnight Society. I just watched that whole show within like a week, and it was so good. And of course I look it up, no season two. And I'm like, I wouldn't have even watched it had I known, because a lot of these shows end on cliffhangers. And even existing shows, which before Act Your Age, I was on half and half, and I still am, because I need to know who Mona picked. And it was at like 91 episodes. Yeah. And it's just like, all right, that's enough. I'm glad that Reba got her, you know, 12 episodes, but I could have gone without more and could have taken a little more half and half, because that was essentially the show along with All of Us. Thanks a lot, Will and Jada. Haven't you done enough that booted half and half off? And I get it. It's a business. It's about money. But just from, you know, a human perspective, outside of the people being affected financially, does it not matter that we don't get a conclusion and we've been hanging in there? Does that mean nothing? It obviously doesn't. Look at the Coyote movie that's about to be scrubbed after all of that. But at what point do you think greed, financial greed, took over the artistry of TV?
I mean, I think it's just the capitalism of it all, where, like, these conglomerates have bought each other up and have formed even bigger conglomerates. So now there's less competition. There used to be like 8 or 9, 10 major companies. Now there's like 4 or 5. So, like, that part of it, it's also like there used to be in the 90s, like you said, you mentioned the Seinfelds, the Friends, all of these shows that were given the space to grow, the Cheers of it all. Like, so many of these shows, like you said, were not hits out of the gate, and they didn't become hits until in the summer when they started doing reruns of it and people were catching up, or in season 2 and 3 by the time word of mouth finally got around. And, like, nowadays you just don't have that space, and it's because they used to have creatives that were involved in those processes that just, like, followed their gut and had instincts and would just have faith in shows and projects, and it wasn't so much about quarterly reports. Now everything is so financially driven. The people who are in charge come from other companies that don't even have anything to do with anything creative. They come from a financial business or some kind of a startup. So they operate over here in this industry as if we're startup companies or some kind of other business, and we don't function like that. So the way that they think it doesn't really gel well with the way that our business was set up to function. Everything now is about quarterly reports, annual reports, just squeezing a little bit more profit margin out of it this year than they did last year so they can justify their annual bonus of $20 million or whatever it is. And that's really what's played a hand in destroying the thing that we love. It's just become way too about the financial aspects of the quarterly and the annual reports of it all, and not so much about like, well, if I like this show and believe in this show, maybe it's not working now, but in 2 or 3 years it can work, or in 5 years we'll have a hit that we can sell to all of these other companies because we'll have 100 episodes of a show and we can make millions of it down the line. But now everybody is so worried about their job this quarter or this year, trying to justify their position or their bonus, that that's all that they can see, which is why they will kill a movie like the Coyote movie without even watching it, because if they can fix the quarterly reports for this month, then that's all that matters right now. It doesn't matter that they potentially could have made $100 million later had the movie been a success. It's about, well, we saved $10 million this month, so good job, Bob. Like, that's just really,
I don't even understand the point sometimes of even creating a show. Like, Melba Moore had a sitcom that debuted the day the Challenger exploded, so no, people probably were not watching that, and it got canceled. So they made all of those episodes only to be like, oh, people would rather watch this, you know, historical tragic event. Ah, you're out of here. Like, why even go through all that? You might as well have never made it in the first place. And maybe it's too much for my mind to comprehend. But I just can't imagine justifying that and feeling like these are amazing, great decisions. And even if you look at older shows, you're getting 25, 30 episodes a season. Like, that's insane to think about now, because you get like 7 and you feel like that's a lot, and then the episodes are longer, they have a full, you know, like step by step, it was like 2.5 minutes their intro, and now they just flash the name across because, oh, got to get in the advertisers. They used to have a whole closing credits, now that's getting squeezed to the side for coming up next. It's like every single thing. And you know, shows will joke about it, like sketch shows and Family Guy, about the on-screen promos in the middle of the show, but that's a real thing. It's like the entire show is solely for advertisement, when I get it, that is why we have TV, but like, there has to be a give and take, and at a certain point I feel like there's not going to be anything. And if you look at like the CW, which is now almost not at all anything scripted, same with Freeform. I love reality TV just as much as the Knicks, you know, Miss Juicy Baby and the Little Women, but you're not going to get the same thing. Yes, it's now, it's exciting, it's trending, but are people going to be talking about it years later? Like, only Flavor of Love really gets, you know, long-standing attention. And like you said, it's not the long-term, you know, that they're looking at. It's just the now. And if, you know, any random show isn't going to get the attention, what is the hope for black shows or black shows with women? Like, do you see it turning around, or is it just getting worse in your eyes?
It's one of those things where I think it's going to continue to get worse before it gets better. Like, I feel like we had a little bit of an uptick maybe 5-6 years ago when all of the streamers were just starting to come into business and everybody just needed content. But now that they've really looked at their books, and a lot of these companies were losing money on their streamers, and even though they were running away from the money, the things that were making money, like the Freeforms and these cable networks, they all ran into streaming, which was actually maybe not the best business for them, and they were all kind of throwing money away. But now I think everybody's pulling back in general, and obviously the thing that they pull back on the fastest and the most on is the black and brown content, sadly. So I think it's a little bit sad to see right now. I'm optimistic though, and sometime it'll turn around once everything balances itself back out, when they realize, okay, what is an actual sustainable number of shows we can have on the air on our streamers and can legit get eyeballs on everything that's good, versus just throwing things out there and hoping somebody will see it, even though we're not promoting these things or we're not giving them time to grow. Like, hopefully they'll find some balance in their plans and we can turn things around, but it's definitely sad times right now.
Yeah, I'd like to think that my BFF Quinta, you know, we go way back, from when I saw her in front of the Chinese theater in LA, and some guy kept trying to get her to say it, he got money, and she was like, yeah, no. Our one interaction, I did say hi to her, so in my head, we're best friends now. But I think that, you know, she'll be a savior of sorts to many by showing, hey, if you just make a traditional show that doesn't have all these big A-list people, but it's well-written, that can be successful. And people are so shocked and amazed, but it's a very simple concept. And I hope that by seeing it with her, that that's going to make somebody use this, and you guys can't see me, I'm pointing at my head, and say, maybe we should try that again and again, because so many of the shows that I see get put out, I'm just like, who is this for? Who is watching this? Who was at the production studio like, yep, this is it, this is the one, you know? And then you look at what they canceled, like Happy Endings got canceled, but then they, I don't know if it was around that same time, but I know ABC also had a show called like Caveman, based on the Caveman from the Geico commercials. So that's something that you think has legs, but Happy Endings, who needs it? And I just don't understand, and I don't know if they really think these shows are gonna make it. Like, there was one, I can't remember the name, it was these guys pretending to be women to work at like an all-female company, not Bosom Buddies, this was fairly recent, and that only had a couple of episodes, also on ABC. And yeah, that might be funny for an SNL sketch, but do you see this making it to 100 episodes? Are these characters that we can flesh out, that we even want to flesh out? So in these cases, with these most asinine plots, no offense to whoever wrote them, I'm sure it was amazing, do you think that there is any discussion on, hey, is this a show that could really go anywhere? Or is it just like, let's put it on, see what happens?
I mean, to the Geico Caveman of it all, like, that's another thing we're dealing with, is like the IP factor. Like, just like everything is either like a reboot of something that's already existed, or based on a toy or a commercial figure or whatever the case is. Because, like, again, going back to people not really having the ability to follow their guts, and maybe it's because over their head there's somebody who doesn't give them leeway, so they're just so worried about their job. They're like, what is a surefire bet that I can do right now? Like, what has a built-in audience? So they want everything to have a come in with a built-in audience versus allowing an audience to find the show and grow naturally. So they're like, well, everybody likes Geico Caveman, like, well, that's a person and a figure we all know, so naturally just throwing a figure out there that we all know and recognize will bring in people just to tune in to check it out, see what it is, versus is this a thing that may have legs or may make the most sense. And I'm just using that example. I didn't see any part of that show or whatever, but I just know that that's like the thinking behind it, is that like they're just looking for things that already have an audience, versus maybe we can build a thing that's so good the audience will find us and connect to us and stay and spread the word, and we can be even bigger than whatever the maybe built-in audience for that other thing is.
That makes sense. I never thought about it. Now I'm thinking of that era where, you know, every show was from like a tweet or something, like Shit My Dad Says.
Yeah, everything was. Yeah.
I'm like, wait a minute. And then there was also a period where all these random celebrities had to get a sitcom, like Bette Midler, Gina Davis. And it's just like, I mean, I liked them. They were okay. But it's just like, where's this coming from? Why? What is this? And that's probably the same thing. Oh, you love Bette Midler? You're going to watch this regardless of the writing or the acting of anyone on it. And clearly doesn't have longevity when that's what you go in with.
I think that they started learning around the time about like the show based on the Shit My Dad Says and things like that, where they started learning that like successes in one area don't necessarily connect to a success in this other area. It's the same thing where like they were like, oh, this person's big on Instagram or TikTok or whatever, so like let's make them the lead of it. And it's like their audience doesn't follow them from this platform to this platform. It doesn't necessarily work like that, and it took some time for them to learn that lesson. So hopefully,
well, clearly some people still need to learn it, because why is the Duolingo bird getting a BBL? Is that supposed to make me get a BBL or use Duolingo? I don't know, but everything doesn't have crossover appeal, in my opinion. But again, the black audience is always underestimated, and yes, I'm gonna talk about this every episode because I'm black. But you know, with the UPN merger and you know how Fox shifted and WB shifted, it was shown with the numbers that they love that Black people are loyal to their shows, but it still is not enough for them to continue making the content. And there's so many movies and shows that have one or two Black characters that you don't even know are on the show because they're not in the promos. And I don't know about you, but if I see somebody, I'm like, oh, she's in this, and I'm going to watch it just because it's them. I don't remember what it was Taraji was on, like Criminal Minds, one of those types of shows back in the day. And I never knew she was on it, and she'd been on there for, like, seasons. I'm thinking, if I knew she was on there, I would have watched it just for her. And I don't know, but I don't feel like the white audience has that same loyalty because everybody on TV is white, so it's not as unique. Right. But with us... Right. Like, I was not familiar with Allison Faust. I did not watch Bounce ever. But when I saw who was on the show, that was enough to make me watch it because I'm right. familiar with them. And it's not the same of, oh, I'm going to watch it just because, you know, I love this person. It's because I know everything they're in. Even if the show isn't necessarily funny, they're going to be funny. And exactly. that's enough. Like, you know, I've seen probably every sitcom Tisha Campbell has been in, including Rita Rocks. You know, Dr. Ken, you know, stuff where she maybe just had a minor role because I know she's always hilarious. And yeah. that is enough to make me want to watch the show. And I don't, again, what's not connecting with people? You know, I knew Kim Whitley from My Brother and Me yes. playing the lady at the arcade with the quarters and have seen her pretty much everything. And I knew Yvette Nicole Brown back from her Big Lots commercials. So, and playing Tony Chow's sister when Tony got married. So these are people that I, you know, essentially, I guess, grew up with, have been watching forever. So to see that they finally have their own show, which they mentioned when they were doing talk shows, that they've never been the star, I'm already like, oh, yeah, this is going to be good. And people will follow you wherever you go. And they just need to put me in charge at ABC or something because...
That's a good point, though. I think they do, execs underestimate our loyalty to these people that... we've seen grow, like you said, from a commercial to now the head of the sitcom, or from third or fourth character, or just a guest star or a two line person to getting their own show. So like, they don't understand the value in our loyalty and how we will support this person because we feel like they're part of our family at that point. After we watched their career over 20, 30 years and seen them go from a two liner to a headliner, we're gonna pull up for that. And I don't think that they fully understand the value of that. And in a way, they also do understand the value of it because, like I said, when the streamers were just coming out, there was a lot of Black content and whatnot, just like when you said the CW or the UPN of it all or Fox of it all. When mm-hmm. these things are first being established, they know who to go to build a foundation. We are always the foundation for these places when they start up, and they know we will pull up for our people and we will support it. But then once the foundation has been laid, once they feel like everything is stable and secure, then they're like, okay, well, now we've got them. We're doing all right. The business is safe. Let's go find the white audience that we really want. And then they always kind of abandon us or abort us. But like,
and we have the brand loyalty with the advertisers, yeah. which they also don't seem to think about. And I do remember when all those Black shows came to Netflix, and it was such a big thing. People were so excited. Yeah. And I sat and I watched... every episode of Girlfriends, every episode of The Parkers.
One-on-one.
Well, one-on-one, I didn't watch season 5. but up until then, and I rewatched so many things that I forgot that I haven't watched in forever because you feel like you know the show so well. Then when you're watching it, you're like, wait a minute, when did this happen? But that's how we do because we want to, you know, have that. Same thing with Living Single being on Hulu. And these are shows that we will rewatch that we're referencing, that we're making memes. And, you know, even like My Wife and Kids, every few days I'm seeing like, oh, thread of your favorite My Wife and Kids moments. And, you know, I'm always saying all of this and all of this. Like, just the things are, just stick with you over the years with Black shows. Maybe because there's not as many of them, or maybe because it's only a handful, it seems, of Black sitcom actors because it's the same people and everything.
Yeah.
But you also know, like I felt with Act Your Age, I was like, I bet they're going to have all my favorite people as the guest stars because it's an all Black show and they're a little older. And of course, I'm seeing people I've not seen in forever. I got to see what happened to TJ's daddy from Smart
the
Guy.
The joy that brought me on set.
I'm just like, you know, I knew when I talked to Allison, it was early on and she was giving me a little teaser of some of the people. But it literally was like, all my face, Thelma Hopkins, Retta Devine, Valerie Pettiford, I'm just like, finally, I'm getting to see my folks that I ain't seen. And, you know, what was that something that you all went into, like, okay, we definitely want to get certain actors from this age range or this era, or did it just naturally occur?
I mean, it occurred pretty naturally. Like, I think we're all just fans of those people. Like you said, we're fans of, and like fans of those same shows. So like anytime we could pull the people, and we were just incredibly blessed that Allison has so much love in this industry after all the things she's accomplished and just the human that she is, people pulled up for us to play on our set. But like, it was ridiculous. Like the names that we would just spit out, like, oh, we got this person. What if we could get this person? That would be amazing. And then like, oh, we actually got Thelma or Loretta or like Valerie Pettifor, like all of these people, like you said. And I think it's also just like the room, a lot of the room, like, is just such huge fans of all of those people. And like, we just want to see them as much as we possibly can. And we know, like you said, whenever you see these people, regardless of how amazing the overall thing may be, if you see them in any moment, they're going to shine ridiculously bright, and it's going to bring you joy in the moments that you see them. So we just reached out to all of those people, and we were blessed that we could actually get them.
Was there ever a discussion of trying to get Valerie and Thelma on there together so she could snatch her wig off or something, relive a little Big Didi and Mona action and Phyllis?
We definitely did want to get them on at some point together. Like, we didn't mention the snatching the wig off part, but we definitely thought that would be crazy.
Like, well, when season two comes, because we're going to put that out there in the universe, hopefully we will get to see that. What episodes did you write specifically?
Me and my partner wrote on episodes 8 and 11, the episode that was about like the gentrification of it all, with the company with the hot dog stand, mm-hmm. and the party plans, the episode with the big food fight, and then the other episode where they have the argument about, like you said, having kids and should they not have kids, and then he had a little snip, so he couldn't have kids. So that episode, we really like the Norman Lear of it all. We love getting into like the heavy topics, mm-hmm. and like really having fun with things that are serious, but looking at them from a light perspective and bringing that joy, like old sitcoms used to do. Like, me and my partner always talk about like how the thing we love the most is like, we used to learn so much from sitcoms, but like we were laughing so hard, you didn't know you were learning. And that's the kind of stuff that we like to write. So we were blessed that Allison allowed us to play on those two episodes, which were really fun. To have a food fight between Tisha Campbell and Yvette and to be right. responsible for it is
especially when you're not the one that has to clean it up.
Right, didn't have to clean it up at all. They did try to get a little cake on us for some revenge on the set, but we did not have to clean a bit of it up.
Well, yeah, I could felt like I could tell when a scene or whatever might have been written by somebody a little younger, because a lot of shows you can tell it's somebody older trying to sound yeah. younger. Yeah. But I could, with those, I was like, did somebody younger write this, just in the way they were interacting, things they would say? And I feel as if that show, which I noticed with Abbott too, so many shows are so predictable that you know what's going to happen, but with these there would be stuff where I'm like, oh, I didn't see that coming. And you're just used to stuff being predictable because that's how most of TV is. Like, if anyone, yeah. spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the first episode of season 3 for Abbott, any other show, Melissa would have accepted that engagement despite what she said, and they would have gotten married because that's just what you do on TV. So yeah. even, you know, I can't think of an example of like a specific plot point, but little weird things on actor age, like that damn painting with the eye. I'm like, what other show would have this random shit on here? But it was funny, and right. it was just something different that isn't going to fit into this mold where you can guess what's about to happen. Or the, right. was it Keeping It Keisha Productions?
Keeping It Keisha Productions. That was from our episode.
That whole thing, I was like, this is so random, but I loved it because I feel like I identify with Keisha. I'm like, this is some shit I would do because I'm always dressing up and shit and doing ridiculous things for my own personal entertainment. But right. that was definitely something that I, you know, could relate to. I'm like, this is so weird, but I love it because you're not going to see anything similar. What other show was going to have that? And then they're teaching you about Black history and all that. Right. And it wasn't preachy. Like, you know, other shows could be, which, you know, that's fine if that's what that show right. is. But sometimes it's like you're getting hit over the head with it, as where yeah. they kind of slid it in a little easier. And it did, you know, show a good dynamic between, you know, mother and daughter that you also don't see a lot, especially with Black mothers, which is one reason I love Half and Half, because you did get to see that relationship so much. And I can't think of many other shows where there's a mother and daughter and they're Black and they're adults. And it's regular. Usually it's a guest starring thing. So I did like to see that, especially because she would kind of, you know, push back on Angela a lot, as she should. Because, you know, Angela's a bit of a square. But, you know, she had to do what she had to do to support Davis, I guess. And I know when I talked to Allison, she was saying that, you know, they just wanted them to have fun and be glamorous and fabulous. But I was always wondering, where is all this money coming from? I know that, you know, Keisha had multiple husbands and Angela, you know, had a lot of money from Davis, but they're just living luxuriously. Was there ever any point where you all thought, okay, maybe we should give Keisha a job or whatever, or you just focus on them living life?
I mean, the main thing we wanted to keep was like just the exploration of what life is like at that age and not having to worry about money, because we've seen so many shows where people of color, Black people in particularly of every age, are always worried about the struggle of it all. So we're just like, what if that's not the focal point here? Like, what if they just have money and we show enough of why they have money and how they're successful, but we don't want to just get focused on that. We want to focus on what it's like to live your life at this age and to find yourself again. It's almost like a coming of age story for women in that age bracket. That's what we wanted to keep the focus on.
Yeah, it's pretty accurate that either we're struggling, scratching and surviving, or it's typically, you know, like the husband dropped out of school and started a business, like the Hughleys, my wife and kids, the Jeffersons, you know. There was very much that. It was rarely that it could be, you know, maybe we're just successful. Maybe we saved. Maybe we invested.
And in particular, the women are responsible for themselves being financially successful, because like you said, in every instance, in every example you just gave, like, the man had money and he was starting a business and he was doing a thing, but like, never do you actually see where like the woman is just carrying her own weight and doing her own thing and doing what she wants to do.
Right, like, so they went,
that's really,
you know,
we wanted to focus on was like these women making their own choices, not worried about men. If they want to have a man, they can, but that's not their complete focus. Like, they have money, so they're not completely wrapped up in figuring out how to make money. They don't, that's not the focus. It's just like exploring and living in friendship,
as it should be. And it was often referred to as the Black Golden Girls. And on the Golden Girls, they were always worried about money or worried about a man. So on this show, it was like, no, we're just doing us. And, you know, that's fine, too, because that way you could just focus on the fun. And if you get a little something on the side or whatever, that's fine. I did feel like Angela was about to try to be a correspondent for the news channel, but I can't imagine it was going to be a full-time gig with her. But I agree. You know, plenty of white shows, they got money. They don't explain anything. They just live in life. So why can't we? Sometimes.
We still look back at that friend's apartment in New York and we're like, how the hell? Like, half those people weren't working at the time and it was always living in that apartment comfortably. Like,
apparently their grandmother, I guess, might have left it to them and it was rent controlled, allegedly.
Yeah, they tried to clean it up at the end.
I don't know about that. But Bernie's penthouse, there's a building by me that that looks like that building. I'm like, is that what they doing up in there? Because that was a very elaborate set, the terrace wrapped around. That was probably one of my favorite TV sets.
Yeah, that set designer crushed it. Like, I remember walking into that set for the first time and all of us were like floored. And particularly, like, being Black, we know sometimes how we get shortchanged on the budget and whatnot, so you don't know what to expect when you walk into it and you're like, okay. But we walked into that set and we were like, this looks like a film set of the highest of budgets. Like, it was amazing.
And I know that the episode where they go on vacation, you didn't have Kim Whitley yet. And I know that there was originally going to be somebody else, then they had to drop out, and then they called and convinced Kim Whitley to do it. But the fact that they were able to film all that, I couldn't tell that she wasn't on the show. The way they were talking about her, it was like she was, you know, already established. And then the order in which the episode aired, you know, you're just like, oh, she's just not in this one. At the time that they filmed that, did they know Kim was coming, or were they just like, we don't know who's going to be, so let's just try to figure it out?
No, when we filmed that, we knew Kim was coming and everything to work around it. What happened originally actually was the person, who we originally thought was going to be in it had to miss a week. So we scheduled for that person to miss that week and wrote an episode around it. And then unfortunately, or fortunately for us, honestly, that thing shifted and we were able to get Kim. But then we had already had the episode focused on her not being there. So we just kept it.
Okay, so this was shot after Kim had already joined.
Yes.
Okay, because yes. I know they're great actresses, but I was like, wow, they're acting like they already knew her. This is some amazing acting. But they did already know her. She just got the week off. Okay.
Yeah.
So
we were incredibly blessed, though, that they all knew each other prior. Mm-hmm. Again, Black Hollywood being a small community of people or whatever. So, like, they were actually friends for 20, 30 years or whatever. So the chemistry you see in episode one feels real because it's real chemistry. Like, they are really friends. So.
And I did go back and see that Kim was on My Wife and Kids twice. They let Jay have a friend two episodes and then nothing else after that. So I'm like, okay, well, that's just Bernie and Keisha before they blew up and had all the coins. But with the show having such, you know, heavy hitters, did you go into it intimidated at all?
I didn't go into it intimidated, but like I said, like, I just kind of approached the whole thing like a fan and a kid in a candy store. I was just like mind blown that like these are the people who we actually got. Like, we would spit out names in meetings and talk to Allison about people, and like, that's who we actually got. Like, and I was blown away. Like, I've been lifelong fans of everybody in the cast, and like, and I'm became huge fans of the younger generation of the cast, Mariah Robinson and Nathan Anderson. Like, everybody just blew us away from jump. But like, yeah, I was just a huge fan and just literally giddy to be on set, to the point where me and Allison would make fun of me a little bit, like in a loving way, because she knew I was such a fan of these people.
Well, that would so, be me. So yeah. I'll be right there. Let me get a selfie with you real quick.
Yeah, it was just like mind blowing. Like, I'll be taken aback. Like, sometimes just looking behind the screen, like, man, I can't believe I'm over here looking at this person, or like, I'm pitching a joke or a punch-up joke. Like, you mentioned the Keeping the Keisha Productions thing that was part of our episode, and like, Tisha came to us during the filming of that and like said she had an idea of a way to like make it bigger than it was, and she asked us for our permission to like put a twist on what was in the script. And we're like, you're coming to us, Tisha Campbell, mm-hmm. legend, asking us for permission to do something. Like, we trust you. Whatever you do, run with it. Trust. Like, we're fans. It was like, but it felt incredible, like, to have them come over and consult us about something. And she made that moment so brilliant. so much more than it was.
She's over there lighting the Actor Age prayer candles that I sent her. I don't know if you ever saw them. And that the gods will shine upon us and give us that season two. Or maybe that pastor in Georgia can make that happen. But talking to y'all, it just seems like you're regular people, which I suppose you are. But in my head, people on TV shows are not regular people. And it's not attainable. And it, you know, because I went to school for TV writing and production, and I've had the same, like, four classes I probably needed for 10 years. And I don't owe any money. I paid everything off, but I haven't ever finished because I'm like, what am I going to do with that? You can't just be a writer on TV. But, you know, talking to you and other people, it's like, if you really work and you really want to do it, it can happen. So what is your advice to us little people still trying to get out there?
I mean, like you said, I really believe, like, the faith factor is the number one key. Like, you just really have to believe and fight for what you want. Like, I did not go to school for this. I was a mass media communications major, and I was focused on music at the time. So everything that I know about TV or film was self-taught. Like, I didn't know as a child, but I had honestly been, like, studying it my whole life. Like, as a kid, I would stay up all night and watch reruns of Nick at Night and the classics I Love Lucy and all of these other shows, and, like, pick up Game unknowingly. And then later on in life, I read every book I could get my hand on. I think that's what you should do. Particularly podcasts, honestly, are the cheat code in this era.
Oh, well, there you go.
So, like, I can give you and whoever else, like, I have a list of podcasts that taught me literally everything that I know. Like, so outside of the just being a nerd and watching every TV show, like, you mentioned all of those shows that only had two or three episodes or It lasted half a season. I watched all of those shows too. Like, I just absorbed everything that I could absorb. So, like, definitely do that. But also, like, yes, listen to these podcasts. There are so many podcasts with professionals that tell you their journey, or that they discuss things that are currently going on in the business, and they discuss, like, how to get from point A to point B. And in this business, it's not a straightforward path. It's a very circular path. And after listening to thousands of hours of everybody's paths, they are very different, but you will find the common thread in the various paths if you listen to enough people tell their journey. So I would definitely just absorb that. Like I said, read the books, and just, like, if you really love it, just the passion will shine through. I think that's
the big I thing. Like to think so.
It's like people can see the passion, aka the nerding out or the standing of it all, and like people will want to follow that, and people are attracted to passion. So, like, if you're passionate about it, people will naturally want to help you too, which is how I got a lot of help. Like, people saw my passion as a fan going to the set of Girl Meets World, and then that's how I got Mark Blutman to be our mentor, who would help us punch up scripts or give us notes. And now we're currently pitching a show together. So, like, yeah, like, people just are attracted to the passion and will naturally want to help you as well.
Who knew Girl Meets World would be so impactful? Michael Jacobs, was that his name? If he would like to make another program so I can come sit in the audience, maybe I can sit with Bonnie Bartlett and William Daniels, since we go way back. Just putting that out there.
Another thing I would actually say, though, is, like, to that point, I mean, if people happen to be in LA or Atlanta now, has, like, tapings from his Pat show, wherever you are, like, do everything you can that's just a fraction, that's, like, part of what you want to be a part of. And don't worry about as much of, like, oh, what's the net outcome of this? Like, what do I get out of this? Like, I wasn't going to those tapings to become friends with the writers to end up pitching shows with them like I would several years later. Like, I was just going to learn and to absorb. And I naturally became friends with the cast and the crew, and things evolved outside of that. And then, like I said, that spec script app that evolved from being friends with them ended up getting me reps, which years down the line ended up getting us on Act Your Age. And, like, just follow the passion and just, like, soak up everything you can, and things will kind of work out if they're supposed to work out.
I personally feel. So I'll assume that we're both correct then. But yes. I don't know of many shows that do film in front of a live studio audience for me to even go see when I do come out there, because nobody's really into that these days.
There's still a bunch. It's probably more than you imagine. Like, the networks, and honestly, I feel like NBC in particular is, like, leaning towards that now. Donald Faison and John Cryer have a new one.
Is that an actual audience? I always think everything is canned laughter these days.
I know everybody always believes that, but, like, 95% of these shows really have audiences. Really? So if you see a multicam, assume the other way that it does have an audience. A lot of these shows have audiences. So there's websites like oneiota.com and other places you can go to see, like, what TV tapings are out there. But, I mean, that's if you're a sitcom fan and want to be a sitcom writer. There's other ways to absorb and just watch all the shows. And there, people put scripts online. That was another way I self-taught, was just, like, reading every script I could find. Thanks to the internet now, there are scripts of your favorite shows. Whenever a show is nominated for Emmys or a movie is nominated for Oscars, though, a lot of times those shows drop their scripts online. So you can just Google a bunch of your favorite show scripts and just, like, pick up game from that. It's a bunch of ways to do it, though.
I should have been taking notes. I'll have to listen to this later. But I do think that, you know, with Abbott Elementary and other shows, that there is a shift. Hopefully you'll get to the point where it's not one show dominating for years and years. Like, can we get a little, you know, variety and not one show just sweeping until they go off the air? Because I would like to have an Emmy. I don't need an EGOT. I would like an Emmy. It can even be Creative Arts. I'm not picky. A Madame Tussauds wax figure. Nice. Doesn't have to be at one of the primary locations. A pop figure. I do have one that I made. I want them to make one. And maybe just, you know, some handprints or a star. I don't think that's asking for a whole lot. So, you know, I think it could happen.
There's no age limit on this. There's no timetable. Like, I'm older than I probably look, so don't believe you got to do this by 20 or 25 and all of those lists come out, oh, this person, the 30 under 30 and all of those things, like the majority of people that I know that made it in this business made it around 30 or after 30. Like, it's so many waves and paths, like I said, that like,
well, I'm 35 and, you know, I'm going to live to at least 100, at least. So I'm only, what, a quarter done? I got plenty of time to do that other stuff. But yes, where can people find you if they want to follow you and see what you're going to be doing?
You can find me at on pretty much all the social media platforms. There's a bunch of new ones out that I can't even remember the name. Spoutable, but Twitter is my main one, or X. I'm never going to call it that. Or Instagram. I'm on all the things. My at is at Really Mighty, R-E-A-L-L-Y-M-I-G-H-T-Y, on pretty much every platform. So you can just look me up there or Google my name, Miles Warden, and it should pop up.
Right, because, you know, you're a big-time Hollywood writer. And when I move out there and I'm best friends with Quinta and Zendaya and Issa, you know, you'll be in the mix too, because that's just how we're going to do, because we're going to be young Black Hollywood and taking it back. I'm putting it out there. I'm acting as if. You hear that, Dr. Benton? But anywho, again, thank you for joining. And tune in next time for another exciting episode of So Good We Named It and More, featuring me. Thank you for listening to So Good We Named It and More, part of the So Good We Named It Network. And be sure to catch the So Good We Named It Golden Girls and Golden Palace podcast as well. All 77 episodes now streaming. And don't forget to follow at So Good We Named It on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and Twitter. Tune in next time for more So Good We Named It and More.